Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org. Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of April 12th, 2020. I'm reading these articles for this first part of our program on Wednesday, April 15th. The first article that we have on the San Angelo Standard Times website is, how many ventilators and beds are available in San Angelo area hospitals? Here's what we know. By Elena Edgen, San Angelo Standard Times. Questions people have asked since the COVID-19 pandemic reached the Concho Valley often have centered on preparedness. But more pointedly, people want to know how many ventilators are available to treat area patients. San Angelo is part of Trauma Service Area K, which covers Koch, Concho, Crockett, Irion, Kimball, Mason, McCulloch, Menard, Reagan, Runnels, Schleicher, Sterling, Sutton, and Tom Green counties. Between these counties, there are 168,836 people, according to the 2019 population estimate. As of April 14th, the area had a combined 39 ventilators, 298 hospital beds, and 18 ICU hospital beds available, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. We are doing everything possible to secure the necessary supplies and equipment to care for our community, providers, and staff, said Shane Plymel, President and CEO of Shannon Medical Center, in an April 7th email. In working with the city and our other healthcare partners in San Angelo and the region, we anticipate that together we will have the resources needed to care for patients. There are no hospitalized coronavirus patients in Trauma Service Area K, which had 44 cases as of 2 p.m. Tuesday, April 14th. These patients are being managed by the Care at Home program, according to Lindy Stone, marketing director for Shannon Medical Center. San Angelo teen arrested in connection to stolen vehicle and firearms, by Elena Edgen. A San Angelo teen has been arrested a day after a pickup containing firearms was stolen, according to a news release from the San Angelo Police Department. On Monday, April 13th, police began investigating the theft of a black 2015 Ford F-250, which had several firearms inside the passenger compartment. A tip led officers to the missing pickup at an apartment complex in the 2100 block of Industrial Avenue about noon Tuesday, according to the release. Officers learned a teen boy was inside the apartment and armed with a handgun. The teen surrendered after police made contact using a patrol unit's PA system, according to the release. Police arrested Jonathan Andrew Tucker, 17, Tuesday on suspicion of theft of a firearm and unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. He remained in Tom Green County Jail with no bond listed as of 5:30 p.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. One of the stolen firearms was recovered in the apartment, but the others remain missing. Anyone with information about this case can contact police at 325-657-4317 or make an anonymous tip by texting TIPSAPD to 888-777 and follow the prompts. And now here's a column by contributor John Mark Hogg. It's time we take rural health care seriously. The COVID-19 crisis has brought into laser focus the vulnerability of our public health system. This is especially true in rural counties, which have become increasingly dependent on urban areas for medical care. The prospect that a pandemic could overwhelm the capacity of urban hospitals makes the problem clear. What happens to the 60 million people who live in rural America? Congressional District 11 is a prime example. There are no hospitals in 30% of our counties, At one time, there were hospitals in Strawn, Rising Star, Baird, Santa Ana, Gorman, Mason, Robert Lee, Sterling City, San Saba, Menard, Cisco, Ranger, Dublin, Goldthwaite, and De Leon. They are all gone. Many of those that remain struggle to survive. This is nothing new, nor am I the first to highlight the problem. Rural health care and public health have long been in a precarious position. For decades, government at all levels has failed to address the need for a sustainable rural health care system and strong public health institutions. Before the current pandemic has even begun to recede, further cuts loom over our county hospitals that will deprive them of hundreds of millions of dollars they rely on to keep the doors open. Rural health care is not just a matter of going to the doctor or being treated in your local community. When the nearest capable medical facility is 50 to 100 or more miles away, it can be a matter of life and death. When a global pandemic threatens to stretch urban hospitals to the breaking point, where are patients who live in smaller counties turn for help? Rural health care is also about economic development and opportunity. As a city council member, I was intimately involved in recruiting businesses to bring jobs to my community. Companies look for three things before they will even consider investing in a community: good housing, good schools, and good medical care. Without good medical care, the chances of a rural community attracting outside investment are slim to none. When you boil it down, failing to invest in rural hospitals and public health is to decide that the economic welfare and future of people who live in rural Texas is not important. We like to say we support farmers, ranchers, and the rural way of life. All too often, that is where the support ends. Words cost nothing. What we need is action. It is time we take rural health care seriously. To do that, we must choose leaders and representatives who will make it a real priority. We did not get here overnight, and we will not fix it overnight, but there are four things we should be doing right now to stop the bleeding. Renew the CAH program. Congress must renew the Critical Access Hospital program, which is the primary support of rural health and emergency care. Without this program, many rural hospitals would cease to exist. Create step-down rural hospitals. Congress must create step-down rural hospitals. These would allow rural communities to operate a scaled-down hospital rather than being forced to close. Strengthen rural primary care. A hospital does not do much good without providers to work there. Rural hospitals are in critical need of primary care providers. Even the urban hospitals in our district have difficulty recruiting specialists, including psychiatric and mental health specialties. This is a national problem we have to address. Restore a robust public health system. Over the last 30 years or more, we have slowly dismantled our public health system. We are seeing the fruits of that all around us right now. Public health departments help prevent not only epidemics and pandemics, but they also protect all of us from such mundane health concerns as resurgent tuberculosis, sexually transmitted diseases, and contaminated food and drinking water. We must restore this system on a state and national level. We can't wait until 2021 to get to work on these. The time to start is now. John Mark Hogg is the Democratic Party candidate for Texas's 11th Congressional District. He is a partner with Jackson Walker LLP and is board certified in labor and employment law by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization. The next article I'm going to read was published in the San Angelo Standard-Times. It comes originally written by the Austin American Statesman, but its contents affect San Angelo. Paxton says new property tax break not meant for coronavirus losses, by Chuck Lindell, Austin American Statesman. A new Texas law allowing tax exemptions for disaster-damaged property does not apply to economic losses from the coronavirus emergency, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton said Tuesday. The law, passed last year by the legislation in response to widespread property damage from Hurricane Harvey, created a temporary tax exemption for damage caused in disaster declared by the governor. Even though Governor Greg Abbott issued a statewide disaster declaration related to the coronavirus pandemic on March 13th, economic losses associated with related business closures or other actions do not apply, Paxton determined in a written opinion signed Monday and issued Tuesday. The law creates a rising scale of exemptions based on the amount of physical damage a property sustained, he wrote. In contrast to these descriptions, a purely economic loss involves no physical damage to the property, Paxton wrote. Thus, purely economic, non-physical damage to property caused by the COVID-19 disaster is not eligible for the temporary tax exemption. The Attorney General's opinion, a non-binding, was sought last week by State Senator Paul Bettencourt, Republican Houston, who requested a quick decision, noting that the deadline to apply for a disaster tax exemption closes June 26th. Here's another relevant story to the area, published by the Austin Times. Cattle prices slump amid outbreak-induced economic fears, by Bob Seckler, Austin American Statesman. Sold-out meat counters at grocery stores nationwide in the initial weeks of the coronavirus crisis might have left the impression that at least one celebrated Texas industry, cattle ranching, would prove immune to the financial pain of the pandemic. It hasn't. Prices for cattle have been volatile but down overall, with a key benchmark in the futures market off about 17% since early March and about 28% since the start of the year. Ranchers are getting by, but they dang sure aren't making any money at current levels, said Bubba Ben Knight, a co-owner of Lockhart Auction Incorporated, which conducts weekly livestock sales. They are going to hold their cattle now if they can to try to let them get bigger and ride this out. The pricing trend for beef cattle is partially correlated to the pattern for many other commodities, as efforts to stem the coronavirus through social distancing policies wreak havoc on the economy, fueling concerns about the ability of consumers to maintain spending. Huge numbers of people have abruptly lost their jobs because businesses have temporarily shut down, making a recession appear increasingly inevitable. For the beef sector, an immediate impact could be reduced demand, or at least a shift to less expensive cuts during the important summer grilling season, which kicks off Memorial Day weekend. But a number of other factors are contributing to the low cattle prices, some economists and beef industry officials say. Those include the widespread halt to dine-in sales at restaurants, a major market for beef, because of stay-at-home mandates, as well as fears that meat packing plants could become bottlenecks if virus outbreaks force them to slow operations. In addition, there's a relatively large supply of beef cattle, with the U.S. herd beginning the year at 31.3 million head, according to the Department of Agriculture, just off a decade high. Nearly 4.6 million of them, or about 15%, are in Texas, more than any other state. It just so happens that right now, the United States is producing a huge amount of beef, said David Anderson, a Texas A&M University agricultural economist. So we've got these big supplies, and then we've got all the rest of these problems caused by the coronavirus. Still, wholesale prices for beef increased sharply last month after people cleaned out grocery stores in a rush to fill their freezers, and also picked shelves bare of chicken, eggs, toilet paper, and many other products. as coronavirus fears began gripping the nation in earnest. The weekly aggregate wholesale price of choice cuts on a cow carcass, a benchmark known as the boxed cutout value, surged roughly 17% in March to about $242 per 100 pounds as grocers scrambled to replenish suddenly empty beef counters and as processing plants shifted away from serving restaurants. But wholesale beef prices have already retrenched somewhat, and ranchers say the increase didn't filter down to them anyway. Cattle prices have been very low. They're as low as I have seen them in a three-decade career, said Arthur Uy, manager of Powell Ranches near San Angelo, and an attorney. Live cattle for April delivery, a benchmark, were trading recently at about 91 cents a pound Monday morning on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, compared with about $1.27 a pound to start the year and about $1.10 a pound at the end of February. Uy said he views the overall pricing trend as largely the result of the broad economic shockwaves rattling many industries amid the coronavirus crisis, as well as a lack of pricing power for cattle producers because they sit at the very beginning in a lengthy line of processors, packers, wholesalers, and retailers in bringing beef to consumers. Current cattle prices aren't a reflection of demand for beef at this point, said Uy, who serves as vice president of the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. Retail prices for beef have been mixed, however. T-bone steak averaged $6.19 a pound at major supermarkets nationally this week, according to the Agriculture Department, compared with $6.62 in the year-ago period, while ground sirloin averaged $5.59 a pound, compared with $4.86 a year ago. Jitters are prevalent in the industry about the overall direction of such prices, and thus all along the beef supply chain. At a time when the economy has taken a sudden downturn and consumers might ratchet back spending, cattle ranchers appear to be bearing the brunt of the repercussions, though, so far. There are lots of unknowns in everybody's mind, and markets don't like uncertainty, said Russell Woodward, a senior manager at the Texas Beef Council, a trade group. What are consumers' purchasing habits going to be as we continue through April, May, and June? Woodward said. There are a lot of concerns around just that. Anderson of Texas A&M said the impact on the state's cattle industry ultimately will depend on the depth and duration of the coronavirus-induced economic downturn. Beef cattle and calves generate sales of more than $10 billion annually in Texas and constitute the state's top agricultural commodity, according to Texas A&M AgriLife Research, easily eclipsing dairy and cotton, which are next in line, with slightly more than $2 billion each in annual sales. We are going to have a lot of beef supplies and maybe a lot less demand this summer, Anderson said. But we're still in the middle of the slow-motion wreck that's happening, he said. As we get into Memorial Day, we'll have a lot better idea of what kind of shape ranchers are in. And now we'll move back to locally written articles from the Standard Times. San Angelo business offering virtual paint parties and kits by Rosanna Aguilera. Looking for ways to stay entertained at home? Megan Lunsford with Cracked Ginger, a San Angelo business that hosts paint parties, is offering kids and adult paint kits to keep people occupied during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm also offering virtual paint parties so you can get a group of friends together while we're all in the safety of our homes, Lunsford said. Kids' paint kits are $15 and adult kits are $25, which include paint, brushes, and choice of wood cutouts, ceramics, stencil boards, or canvas projects. All kits can be found at crackedginger.com/collections/craft-kits. Lunsford said she will give step-by-step directions to help people paint their project, and participants will have up to 2 hours of her instruction. This has been a really fun girls' night in and for school friends getting to see each other, she said. Monthly paint parties will be available and can be found on the calendar at crackedginger.com. Registration will be online as well. Customers can purchase a package with or without the supplies for those that already have all they need at home. Lunsford said she's also offering in-town porch delivery. We're doing porch pickup as I work out of my home and also offering in-town porch delivery, Lunsford said. For more information or to book your paint party, email crackedginger@gmail.com or call 830-837-2161. Earth Day turns 50. San Angelo Environmental Group invites public to digital celebration by John Tufts. A local environmental group will observe Earth Day digitally this year amid social distancing. Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020, marks the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, and the San Angelo Friends of the Environment, SAFE, has invited the public to celebrate with them on social media, according to a news release. Join us on social media as we highlight Earth Day accomplishments and make suggestions on how you can make Earth a greener place to be, the release states. An Earth Day activity book for San Angelo children is available to download at saferrr.org, according to the release. 2 years ago, SAFE was forced to shut down its recycling center at 702 Warehouse Road and auction off its equipment. But officials with the group said the organization would reorganize to focus on local conservation and environmental issues. SAFE director Sarah Lance said the organization was still very much committed in making San Angelo a greener place to live. Our footprint and impact may be smaller today than 2 years ago, but we intend to regrow our organization into an educational resource for our community, the release stated. Officials with SAFE are currently working with local teachers on a classroom curriculum for the environment and said their website contains information about current recycling programs in San Angelo. And that website is www.saferrr.org. How to volunteer with SAFE. Those who wish to volunteer with the San Angelo Friends of the Environment can do so by visiting their website and filling out a form at saferrr.org/volunteer. No reported injuries after chemical spill and fire at Lone Star Beef Facility in San Angelo by Rosanna Aguilera and Colin Murphy. Police and firefighters were dispatched after a report of a possible structure fire Tuesday in a chemical room with people still inside. At 11:25 a.m. Tuesday, April 14th, police were dispatched to Lone Star Beef Processors, 2150 East 37th Street. A container of acid was compromised due to the fire, Jay Neely, San Angelo Fire Department Battalion Chief, said. It leaked out about 50 gallons. We didn't know what it was, but it turned out to be a concentrated cleaning solution. We are more relaxed now. The fire was extinguished, and the solution will be diluted with 1,000 gallons of water. After that, the fire marshal will inspect and see what actually caused the fire, Neely said. Neely said there were no injuries reported. Paint Rock ISD to remain closed through end of school year by Paul Harris. Paint Rock ISD will remain closed for the remainder of the 2019-2020 school year due to the coronavirus pandemic. The decision, announced Monday evening by Paint Rock Superintendent Ron Klein, was made out of an abundance of caution and concern for the safety and well-being of its students, parents, teachers, and staff. The district's teachers and staff will continue to provide online and long-distance instruction as well as meal services for students, according to the release. The high school and kindergarten graduations will still take place in a modified arrangement. Both graduations will also be live streamed. Details are still being finalized. Paint Rock, a Class 1A school, is located about 30 miles east of San Angelo. Tom Green County Election Office inundated with calls about voting applications. From staff reports. According to a news bulletin from the Tom Green County Elections Administrator, Vona Hudson, the Elections Office is receiving calls about voter registration applications that residents are receiving for themselves and deceased family members. Hudson said these forms are not mailed by her office, but rather are sent out by different groups that are trying to ensure that everyone is registered and that their registration is current. The election office is not sure where the names for the mailings were obtained, Hudson said, noting that voters are encouraged to call 325-659-6541 to verify their registration status if they are unsure whether or not they are registered and or they receive one for a family member that is deceased. I understand it can be upsetting to receive these forms, especially for deceased family members, Hudson said. But we are not mailing them, and we are more than happy to make sure that the records are correct for anyone that wants to check the information we have. We do receive forms from voters that need to be registered and or updated, so it can be a helpful tool. If the voter will examine the form closely, they will find the name of the group that has mailed the form to them and establish that we did not mail it to them. Be the hero you're looking for. San Angelo author makes debut with young adult book by Elena Edgen. Fulfilling her dream of being an author, a San Angelo woman and former teacher stationed at Goodfellow Air Force Base has her first young adult novel on the shelves. Mary Underwater by Shannon Delisky follows the life of 14-year-old Mary Murphy, who feels like she's drowning. Between a violent father, a suspicious social worker, and the stress of an upcoming science project, she decides she doesn't want to be a victim anymore. Inspired by Joan of Arc, the girl decides to build a submarine and escape. The cover has the line, "Be the hero you're looking for." I hope it connects with any child, but particularly children who have difficult home lives, like Mary Murphy, and needs to help cope, Delisky said. Delisky's inspiration behind the book, which she finished in 2015, came from John Mayer's song, Walt Grace's Submarine Test, January 1967. At the time, her family lived in southern Maryland, which led to the setting of Chesapeake Bay. For those looking to buy the adventurous tale, signed copies are available at Old Town Books, 506 South Chadbourne Street. The book is also available in most places books are sold, including Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and Amazon. It is available as an audiobook as well. People who want to keep up with Delisky's works can follow her at shannondelisky.com. About Shannon Delisky. Shannon Delisky is part of a military family. Her husband is a social worker in the Air Force, and they have moved around the world. Currently, they are stationed at Goodfellow Air Force Base in San Angelo with their three kids, a rescue beagle and a rescue dachshund. Delisky took some time to do a Q&A session about her journey to becoming an author. Question: how does it feel to have your first book published? Answer: it's really exciting. It's a little scary to have my thoughts and feelings out in the world, but I've always been a writer, especially for kids. I used to be a middle school and high school English teacher. Will there be more books? I hope to continue publishing middle grade and young adult novels. My agent has my newest in her inbox right now. Have you always wanted to be an author? I have always wanted to be an author. I think I completed my first novels when I was in seventh grade. I wrote one about Massachusetts in the 1700s and a thriller featuring my friend group. What has your journey been like? Publishing is a very slow journey. An aspiring author has to find a literary agent through querying, a process where you email and pitch your book to agents. That took me about 7 months. And then you go on submission, where the agent pitches your book to various presses and publishers. In May of 2018, an editor contacted my agent and asked if Mary Underwater was still available. We sold it to Abrams Kids Amulet Books in June. Books come out about 2 years after they sell to the publisher, after edits and promo. My book came out April 7th, 2020. Publishers send out advanced reader copies to booksellers and send the book out to festivals and conferences before the publishing date to gain interest, and independent bookstores like Old Town Books decide if their patrons would be interested in the book. Is there anything else you'd like people to know? We are a military family, and I like to write stories as love letters to the places we've lived. I've got a river mermaid story about San Angelo all planned out. Eden man charged with crashing into San Angelo police officer's vehicle during pursuit, by Elena Edgen. An Eden man has been arrested after intentionally crashing into a police vehicle, according to a news release from the San Angelo Police Department. About 11 p.m. Saturday, April 11th, San Angelo police responded to a call of a man forcing a woman into a blue 1993 Ford pickup at a gas station in the 100 block of South Abe Street, according to the release. An officer attempted to conduct a traffic stop about three blocks away, but the driver fled and a pursuit followed, according to the release. During the pursuit, the pickup slowed down enough to allow the woman to jump out of the passenger side. The driver then intentionally drove head-on into a police unit that attempted to stop his escape, according to the release. The pickup managed to leave the scene and drove into Concho County, where Department of Public Safety troopers continued the pursuit. The pickup crashed and DPS arrested him, the release stated. The woman, the driver's ex-girlfriend, was not injured. The SAPD officer whose vehicle was hit was also uninjured. DPS arrested Brandon Wilson, 26, on suspicion of assault on a peace officer, possession of marijuana, possession of a controlled substance, evading arrest, unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, deadly conduct, driving with an invalid license with a previous conviction, and no proof of financial responsibility. Wilson also had several city warrants, according to online jail records. He remained in Tom Green County Jail in lieu of an $82,922 bond as of 11:30 a.m. Monday. Additional charges may be added depending on the investigation's outcome, according to the release. Now, here is probably one of the biggest news stories coming from San Angelo this week. Angelo State President Brian May resigns. Angie Wright named interim president, by the San Angelo Standard-Times. Angelo State University President Brian J. May resigned Friday, according to a news release from the university system. The chairman of the Texas Tech University System Board of Regents and I have accepted Brian's resignation as president of Angelo State University, said Dr. Ted L. Mitchell, chancellor of the Texas Tech University System, in a prepared statement. We wish Brian and his family well. May served as the president since November 7, 2012. Angie Wright, vice president for finance and administration, will serve as the interim president, effective immediately. Wright, a graduate of ASU, has been a member of the Ram family community for more than three decades. She assumed her current duties in 2014, after 15 months as the interim vice president for finance administration. She joined the university in 1991 as a payroll coordinator, after 5 years in the private sector. She was named ASU's Manager of Business Services in 1999. She was promoted to Budget Director in 2003, and then in 2005, received the responsibilities for payroll services as well. In 2006, Wright advanced to Assistant Vice President for Finance and Administration and then to Associate Vice President in 2007. She remained in this position until her appointment as Interim Vice President in March 2013. In the coming weeks, Mitchell and the Board of Regents will announce plans detailing the presidential search process. Goodfellow Air Force Base announces first positive COVID-19 case by the San Angelo Standard-Times. A Goodfellow Air Force Base military dependent tested positive for COVID-19. Goodfellow notified public health authorities of the positive test and are taking prudent measures to ensure the dependent is receiving the appropriate care. The individual contracted the virus through community spread. The military dependent is the first confirmed case for Goodfellow, said Colonel Andre Nazario, 17th Training Wing Commander. We have been preparing for weeks and have, in partnership with our community, measures in place to combat the virus. Our guiding principle is, as always, your health and safety. The individual and their family have been quarantined to prevent further spread of the virus. We ask for your compassion and prayers for the dependent and his family, said Nazario. The case is among the positive tests count announced by the city. Goodfellow continues to take prudent, proactive measures to ensure the safety of its population. We continue to urge everyone to use proper hygiene practices, practice physical distancing, and use face masks to limit the spread of the disease. Currently, this is the only Goodfellow Air Force Base-related positive case. San Angelo Police Seeking Information About Robbery Suspect by Colin Murphy. The San Angelo Police Department is seeking help from the public to identify a man who robbed the Stripes convenience store at 1733 Pulliam Street at gunpoint just after 10 p.m. on Friday, April 10th. The suspect was described as a short and stocky Hispanic male in his early 20s. The suspect was wearing a surgical mask, gray hoodie, gray sweatshirt, possibly an orange or red shirt, gray gloves, black pants, and dark or black colored shoes. The suspect fled the area eastbound in a dark or black colored sedan. If you have any information about the suspect's identity or whereabouts, please call the San Angelo Police Department at 325-657-4315. To remain anonymous, text TIPSAPD to 888-777 and follow the prompts. And now here's a horticultural item that is about a very popular plant in Texas. How to Care for Pecan Trees by Allison Watkins, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. There are a lot of things to keep in mind for pecan tree care in the spring. Right now is the time to consider a foliar zinc spray and nitrogen fertilizer application. Make plans for irrigation and be on the lookout for pecan nut case bearers, a small moth that destroys developing nutlets. For homeowners that just want to keep their trees alive and looking attractive for the landscape, watering is the main consideration. For those that want to harvest a good crop in the fall, nutrition and pest control are necessary also. Zinc helps with leaf expansion, and zinc-deficient leaves are small and stunted. Leaves are the food factories for the plant, and if stunted, will not be able to do enough photosynthesis for a good crop. Pecan trees are not able to absorb zinc through the soil well, so a foliar spray is required for the tree to take it in. The first application should be in the spring during initial leaf expansion and can be repeated two more times when there is new growth in the canopy. Nitrogen, on the other hand, is not well absorbed in the leaves and is most effective when applied to the ground and watered into the roots. Apply 1 pound of ammonium sulfate, 21-00, per inch of trunk diameter around the drip line of the tree and water in. Don't fertilize before a predicted heavy rain, as that would likely wash the fertilizer down the street with the stormwater runoff. The pecan nut case bearer, PNC, pest, should be evaluated locally at each home or orchard. Trees with a heavy crop set may not need treatment because lessening the crop can increase nut size and quality if it starts out overloaded. But for trees with a lighter crop or with a heavy PNC population, treatment will help protect the harvest. Each grower should inspect their leaves to get the best timing for treatment, but we do provide an email announcement each spring to those interested in receiving a spray date recommendation. Contact the Extension office to sign up by calling 325-659-6528. Of course, irrigation is also key for a healthy tree and plentiful harvest. Pecan trees are not drought-tolerant species and require steady irrigation when there is no rainfall. Plan to water the drip line weekly when there is no significant rainfall. If you noticed last fall that you had pecans that looked full size and good quality but were hollow and had holes, this is pecan weevil damage. The time to look out for and treat those is in August. Visit the website tomgreen.agrilife.org/horticulture for a publication on West Texas pecan management and also a publication on controlling pecan pests. And now I'm continuing to read from the San Angelo Standard Times website. I'm reading today, Thursday, April 16th, as we read additional stories that have been published on the website. Coronavirus in San Angelo, teen girl tests positive for COVID-19, total cases at 41, by Elena Edgen. Here's a look at how COVID-19, a.k.a. new coronavirus, is impacting the San Angelo area. Health officials reported one new case of the coronavirus in San Angelo on Thursday, a teenage female, which they classified as community spread, bringing the current total of positive cases up to 41. As of 2 p.m. Thursday, April 16th, there were 1,027 tests done in San Angelo. Of those tests, 33 are pending and 953 are negative. The city reports 29 cases are being actively monitored and 11 people have been released from quarantine. The city has reported one death from the disease, a man in his 70s with underlying conditions. April 14th, 12th, and 8th were the last times the city went a day without a new case. And now under their daily blog that they write entitled Live Updates, here are more stories related to COVID-19. Meals for the Elderly closes for 2 weeks, April 13th. The San Angelo Meals for the Elderly offices announced that they will be closed from April 13th through the 27th in hopes of slowing the spread of the coronavirus, according to a Facebook post from the group Sunday, April 12th. While services will stop, the organization has ensured people will still have meals during the closure. The volunteers and staff delivered additional meals prior to the Sunday announcement. They are keeping in contact with recipients to identify their needs. City reopens trails. Playgrounds remain closed. April 13th. Easter saw trails, parks, and most gathering places shut down over the weekend, but the city has pulled back on some of those restrictions. As of Monday, people can use parks for exercise, but cannot congregate with people not from your household. The dog park is reopened, camping is prohibited, and playgrounds and tennis courts are still closed. The KOA walking trail remains closed to all pedestrian traffic, but the Concho River Walk and the Red Arroyo Trail are open. Lake Nasworthy's public docks and ramps have reopened. Fishing and boating are allowed, by people from the same household. Health officials unsure how many Tom Green County residents have been tested for COVID-19, by John Tufts. Robert Lee Mayor Allison Crenshaw said she has tried for weeks to get an accurate number of Coke County residents who have been tested for the coronavirus in San Angelo. As of Wednesday, April 15th, no one can tell her. "It's been frustrating," Crenshaw said. "I think our residents and any county's residents deserve to have that information." Getting those updates might take a while. As of 2 p.m. Wednesday, April 15th, there were 1,009 people tested for the coronavirus in San Angelo, but officials aren't sure yet how many of those tested live in Tom Green County or the surrounding counties. The issue comes down to how test results in San Angelo have been sorted. Local health officials said forms to test for the coronavirus are filled out by those collecting the samples or the patients themselves. While these forms include the demographics of the person being tested, health officials were keeping tabs on the number of tests being run, separating negative test results from positive cases. "The health department only follows positive cases and their contacts," said Sandra Villarreal, director of health services for the city of San Angelo. If a positive patient is not from Tom Green County, Villarreal said the local health department sends all required information, which includes the patient's name, address, and phone number, to that person's county health department or to the regional health department office in El Paso. "If we were to get a positive test result from a person who lives in Coke County, we will send that information to El Paso and they will do the follow-up or case investigation," Villarreal said. "It might get reported as a positive in Tom Green County with all our daily counts until we begin reporting separate counties for statistical purposes," Villarreal said. "The positive case would still show up in Coke County and not Tom Green on the Texas Department of State Health Services COVID-19 dashboard, according to Villarreal. Crenshaw believes residents living in rural counties like hers need more information and more transparency in the testing process. "It's not just Coke County," Crenshaw said. "It's every surrounding county near Tom Green. I don't think it helps if the first test result we hear about happening is a positive test result. Right now, Wednesday, we still don't have a positive test result in Coke County, and we're very fortunate for that, but we should know how many people may be experiencing symptoms and that they're being responsible and getting tested." COVID testing numbers by county to be released. Local health officials appear to have sided with Crenshaw. "The decision to begin the laborious process of sorting through more than 1,000 coronavirus patient forms in San Angelo began after a Monday meeting between Crenshaw and Villarreal, who also spoke with Ballinger Mayor Donnie Seymour. I had a discussion with staff late that afternoon, and we agreed to begin the separation process on Tuesday," Villarreal said. "We are having to go back and separate them by county. We are working on it. We will begin reporting as soon as we are able to. Staffing is an issue." When ready, a breakdown of county-by-county numbers will appear on the City of San Angelo's website, cocts.us/departments-services/health-services/coronavirus-COVID-19. San Angelo Airport to receive $1.2 million from CARES Act, from staff reports. According to a news release from Texas Senator John Cornyn, San Angelo Regional Airport, Mathis Field, has been awarded a federal grant of $1,227,539 as economic relief following the economic distress caused by the outbreak of the novel coronavirus. The funding, which was appropriated by Congress last month as part of the CARES Act, comes through the U.S. Department of Transportation. As Texas reels from the economic destruction caused by the coronavirus outbreak, it's important our airports have the resources they need to weather the storm, Senator Cornyn said. I commend both the Trump administration and leaders in San Angelo who worked to secure these funds during this trying time. Uber for lawn care. New company in San Angelo allows vendors to bid on mowing your lawn, by Rosanna Aguilera. A lawn mowing company has launched in San Angelo, offering homeowners the chance to have vendors submit bids to mow their lawn. Green Pals co-founder Gene Caballero said the company has been described as Uber for lawn care. Customers can visit Green Pals website for San Angelo at yourgreenpal.com and submit their address and requested date of service. The website will let vendors know there is a lawn to bid on. They will submit their bids after seeing how big the yard is on Google Maps. The bids will go to the homeowner, and they will select who they wish to cut their yard. The vendors will have ratings and reviews from previous jobs, which the customer can look at. Once they choose, the vendor will cut the lawn and then upload a picture of the completed work. Payment is done online and will only go through once the job is finished, similar to staying in a hotel, according to Caballero. To become a vendor, you must submit an application online at yourgreenpal.com. It is free to sign up. To be approved, you must have the following: equipment, pictures of previous work, references, valid social security card, bank account. If you become a vendor, 5% of each job will go to GreenPal. And here's an article of interest written from Austin, published in the San Angelo Standard-Times. Coronavirus fallout. Texas Workforce Commission boosts hours, adds staff. By Lori Hawkins, Austin American-Statesman. With a record number of Texans filing for unemployment benefits amid the coronavirus pandemic, many have found the process to be frustrating and time-consuming. The first step is getting through to the Texas Workforce Commission over its clogged phone lines or its website, which has crashed repeatedly after being flooded by applications. The agency, which processes unemployment claims in the state, has acknowledged the bottlenecks and urged people to keep trying. Now the commission is laying out steps it is taking to improve the filing process, including expanding hours and services. We are focused on helping Texans in need, and we're doing that by expanding our call center hours. We're adding more unemployment insurance services, we're improving our web and phone system, and we're doing that to continue to provide benefits that Texans deserve and need, agency spokesman Cisco Gámez said Wednesday. The commission expanded its call center hours this week, and it now takes calls from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. It also expanded its number of call centers from 4 to 6, with plans to open 2 more, Gámez said. The agency is also expanding its workforce, including an emergency hiring of 115 people. It is also moving about 245 volunteers from the Texas Senate and Texas House to assist with unemployment services. Altogether, there will be around 1,000 additional people helping, with 350 additional agents that will be answering phones, Gámez said. The agency is encouraging people to apply using its website, and it said 90% of applications are processed online. Gámez said the agency has heard from frustrated applicants who haven't been able to get through on phone lines and are worried they will lose out on benefits. That is not the case, he said. Some have received notice of a deadline, he said. If they can't get through by that date, they won't be penalized. If they qualify for benefits, they will receive them. Benefits will be backdated, he said. We're going to backdate that as far back as March 8th, from the time that they stopped working, for the time that they had reduced hours, or when they were furloughed, or when they were laid off, Gamez said. The commission said it has received the equivalent of 20 months of claims in 30 days, with 1.2 million people filing claims. The agency has paid out $400 million in jobless benefits since the week beginning March 14th, Gamez said. Jonathan Lewis, a senior policy analyst with left-leaning Center for Public Policy Priorities, said it's expected that all the states are not set up to handle this level of claims, but it's important to remember that the impact on individuals is huge here because we've already been in this crisis for over a month, and folks have had rent come due. Folks have had food they still need to purchase, and people still have medical expenses. In the Austin metro area, about one out of every five workers, or 261,000, have lost their jobs due to the pandemic, according to an estimate by John Hockinos, president of Austin-based economic analysis firm TXP Incorporated. Hockinos outlined his analysis in a presentation to city leaders last week. With the local unemployment rate at 2.6% in February, that would mean the jobless rate in the Austin area would now be above 20%. The Center for Public Policy Priorities hopes the commission will work to reduce administrative processes that are applied during stable economic times, Lewis said. The quicker we can get money into people's bank accounts, the better off Texans will be in the long run and in the recovery, he said. It's really important to focus on the individual, but it's also important to think about the impact on the economy. When we can start reopening, having cash available to spend is going to be a huge part of that happening. Thank you for joining us for the reading of the San Angelo Standard-Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.